Welcome to this episode of Becoming an Elite Financial Advisor. I'm Sten Morgan. I'm an advisor just like you. The purpose of this podcast is to share great ideas from around the country, from advisors that we get to coach in our EAN community to experts that we bring in to share great ideas with you. Today, I want to hang out with you and I want to tell you about my top five takeaways from the Alex Hormozi event, the acquisition.com event that I went to in Vegas a few weeks ago. You will hear takeaways on how to level up and scale faster, how to find the points of resistance in your business so you can push through those and see rapid growth. It was a great event. I encourage you to attend it. Let's jump in. I'm excited to dive into this episode with you. I recently attended the Alex Hormozi event in Las Vegas. This is the acquisition.com event. And it was a really challenging event for me. I had some really specific takeaways that when I returned from the conference, I made some pretty quick changes into my business. So I want to walk through the top five takeaways I had from the conference. I'm going to share with you how this has impacted my business, what I was maybe doing before, and how I'm going to change it moving forward. And I would recommend you attend the event, great event, but I want to give you these five top takeaways. All right, first one we're going to talk about is you need to find your main constraint. With EAN, our firm, we call this a resistance point. What is the thing that's standing in between you and your full potential? And then you need to obsess over it. Put as much of your resources as possible into solving this problem. Unfortunately, where I found myself in the past at times was I would get distracted by things. And so I would be trying to manage multiple projects at once. And while I was moving those balls forward, I was not experiencing 10x results in one of those areas. So for me as a financial advisor, I experienced some success in my business. I finally went from where I was worrying and how I was going to pay my bills to, hey, I actually have enough revenue in the bank. So I know I'm going to pay my employees. I know I can pay my bills. And it gave me the ability to rest. But it also gave me the ability to dream. And, you know, as a visionary, I wanted to create new things and write books. And it distracted me from focusing on what is the main thing standing in my way. So for most advisors, and as you reflect as I say this, is yours revenue? Meaning, should that be the thing you're focusing on at all costs, or are you focusing on things that are less important than that? And so as an advisor, I think through different resistance points or constraints. And at EAN, we talk about, is it prospecting or revenue? Is it your expertise or your ideas? Is it your thinking? Is it a mindset issue? Is it about operations or systems? Or maybe it's just your ability to communicate where you get clients' attention, but you're not closing them. And so I know in our community, we spend a lot of time, we'll try to figure out what is your main constraint if you hang out with us, what is the resistance that's holding you back, and then how do we attack that as aggressively as possible? There are times in my career where I thought I was doing this, but I was doing kind of a light version of it. I was not fully focusing my team, every investment dollar into my business to attack one main point of resistance or constraint that was going to have the biggest impact on my flow through my pipeline. I was solving a lot of small problems all the time, but I was letting those small problems distract me and I wasn't focusing on the main one. So first kind of big takeaway that really kind of rocked me was live there with these experts and they called me out and they said, you are distracted. You need to focus on the main constraint and solve it at all costs. All right, number two. You need to have a great product, but then you need to focus on revenue. When I heard this point and they flushed it out, what the term that came to mind for me was Gitmo. G-E-T-M-O, good enough to move on. And this was something, if you're a perfectionist in your business and you find yourself spending way too much time trying to take something, you know, from a 2 out of 10 to an 8 out of 10, and you can stop there, but you pursue the 10 out of 10. I just want to be perfect. I want my website to be great, so I'm never going to roll it out. I shot some new video content, but it's not perfect, so I'm just going to keep iterating it. Your product needs to be great, but then you need to focus on revenue at all costs. So as an advisor, if you're struggling and you don't have enough revenue to have the lifestyle you want, to hire the team you want, do not keep iterating your product. If it's a 2 out of 10, yeah, let's level that thing up. Let's make it great. But if it's a 7, 8 out of 10, it's good enough. Now you need to focus on revenue at all costs because revenue opens up other opportunities. You can hire people, which maybe increases the expertise of your firm, or it takes away things that you're doing that you shouldn't, gives them to another team member, so frees you up to better serve your clients. So if you believe in your product, and this is where you need to ask for input, if you're in our community, this is stuff we talk about all the time together, is it good enough to move on? Or is your system need to be fixed temporarily so it can handle new clients? Is the way you deliver financial plans high quality? Do you have great ideas? And as soon as you get those things to a good point, you should probably say for the next 12 months, I'm solely focused on revenue. And the things that are going to try to distract me to maybe tweak my product or maybe my fact finder can be a little better is you say, no, it's good enough for now. I'm going to go help a lot of people, generate a lot of revenue. And then maybe at the end of 12 months, I will pause and reflect and see what things need to be changed or adjusted. So that was a great takeaway. Have a great product and then focus on revenue at all costs.
To be an elite financial advisor, you need to exceed your clients' expectations whenever they meet with you. Unfortunately, most advisors are holding very average meetings. Years ago, I finally challenged myself to evaluate my meetings, and I realized they were very average at best. It was not until I unlocked the power of the whiteboard when the energy changed in the room. When I had clients saying, this was a great meeting, this was more than I expected. I want to challenge you to start using a whiteboard today. Stand up in the room, teach, coach, educate, and exceed your clients' expectations. Check out gobeelite.com to see 10 videos that I've made of me whiteboarding. 5 of those videos are me teaching advisors how to whiteboard, and 5 of those videos are videos I've sent directly to my clients. This is a very easy way to improve your communication skills, but also to attract your clients, to attract new prospects, and to exceed their expectations. Go check it out.
The next one, this was really challenging for me. A great line by Alex, where he said, you need to trade novelty for loyalty. And for all the dreamers out there, for all the visionaries, for the creative business owners, for the marketing minds, this is for all of us that enjoy the newness of things at times, that you could get comfortable with your current business. Your team could be, you know, operating at a good level, and you say, I just need something else. If you take yourself away from your core business and get distracted by smaller things, the novelty of the newness, you're going to hurt your core business. So the way this worked for Legacy is that as soon as I hit a certain level and I got some national awards and I was like, well, I kind of figured this business out, I was less excited about doubling my personal income and doubling the amount of clients I served in that moment. And so I had this newfound freedom of time to focus on some other things, but it hurt my core business. I wasn't as present with my team, so they didn't have enough clear direction. Our clients were happy and we were still growing, but there was a lot more people out there that needed what we had to offer. I just wasn't giving it the appropriate amount of time. So another core point they taught was 70-20-10. 70% of your time should be focused on doing more of what you're already doing that works. 20% of your time should be spent making that thing better. 10% of your time should be focused on something new. There's been times in my career where it was flipped. I was spending 70% of my time writing a book or doing something new, creating a course. 20% of my time, you know, doing what worked, and 10% making it better. While I was challenged by these thoughts, and I had to sit there in my seat while they called me out, you know, they called the room out, but I was felt at times they were talking to me, that it was true. I think there's times even in our live events where we say a truth. It's hard to argue, but we want to rationalize why we were doing what we were doing. And there's probably always reasons. There were some people at this event where they were like, hey, I want to sell my business. And they're like, well, in order if you want to sell one of your businesses for 10x its value right now, you need to shut down your other businesses. Well, on the surface, that's probably true if you put all your attention to one thing, but it's probably a little more complicated than that. You know, you fire all those employees overnight. Maybe you need to come up with a 12 to 24 month run path to close those businesses down if you truly want to get 10x results with one of your businesses. So super challenging for me. I think it's good to kind of pause and ask yourself, do I have too much novelty in my business and life right now? Are there things that are fun, but maybe aren't helping as many people and are not driving revenue for myself? What I do know as somebody that likes to be creative and create things and write books and create content for people to help more people, I do need to hold space for that creativity. And that's where the 10% comes in. I have made the mistake of pulling other team members into those meetings where I dream out loud. And if somebody's not prepared for that meeting or that's not the way their mind works, they can get freaked out by that. They can, you know, why are we changing stuff again? And some people hate change. Like they want a system that works and they want to just run that system over and over again. So I've learned to be careful with who I have in the room when I think big ideas and then hold time for it, but hold the right amount of time for it. So that one was really challenging for me. The next one is most businesses have data risk. And data risk is not, you know, is somebody going to come take your data? It is, do you even know what your data is? That the most strategic businesses are making data-driven decisions at all times. And so at minimum, this is something I've been working on for the last 2-3 years, you need to have a dashboard, and maybe this starts as a, you know, Google Doc or an Excel spreadsheet that tracks your main metrics every month. So what are the things that inform you as a business owner if you're making the right decisions? This could be how much AUM you've added. This could be how many financial planning clients you currently have active. This could also be how many A plus A and B clients you have, because the data might tell you, wow, our B client list is growing faster than our A's and A pluses. So maybe we're attracting the wrong type of client. Your expenses versus your income. Are we staying profitable? Most business owners, and I've been, you know, guilty of this in the past, I'm just going off of feel. It's like, hey, we got money in the bank. People seem happy. I have my AUM fees that are going to pay me. I got some financial planning prospects in the pipeline. And the enemy of great is good. That, like, that's probably working for you to some degree. But if you want something great, like if you want your full potential and you want to be a savvy business owner, that when you're in a room of business owners and everyone else is talking about their dashboards and their data, as opposed to you sitting there embarrassed, you're like, I don't know any of that stuff. I just know I make good money and it all's probably hopefully going to work out. You need to level up your level of data. And so for us, we're working on dashboards internally at Legacy to where I can track all my AUM, financial planning, revenue data. But there's also some really interesting metrics if you want to try to scale and sell your business someday. You know, EBITDA, when we invest money in our business, what type of return do we usually get on each dollar? What's our prospect pipeline look like? Don't take it too far where you're drowning in data. So I think there's an exercise here of kind of refining it down to like, are there maybe 5 to 10 data points that are the most clear indication of our success? So that if we're watching those closely at least once a month, and I'm meeting with my team and talking about it with my leaders, that's informing, should we keep on the path we're going down or do we need to make a pivot? This could be as simple as I pay a bookkeeping company to run my expenses for me. Most business owners don't even have that. They might work with their CPA once a year to kind of reconcile their books from QuickBooks and that's it. At minimum, you should have somebody sending you, and this shouldn't be your time. Your time is better spent doing something else, sending you your business metrics, your financial data at least once a month. Some business owners I know look at it every week. So a quick audit for yourself, like where do you stand on the data side of your business? Are you fully in the know and it's live and updated dynamically? Or I have a spreadsheet, but I have to manually update it. So it's usually 2 or 3 months behind. Or are you in the camp, which I've been before years past? I don't really know. I think I just hope it works out. And as long as we have money in the bank, I think I'm doing a good job.
Fellow advisors, our most in-demand event is back. How to Charge Live is happening October 20th and 21st right here in my office in Franklin, Tennessee. Seats are limited and will sell out fast. We're now taking deposits to reserve your spot. Visit howtochargelive.com to reserve your seat today. My goal with this event is for you to leave changed, to see your business different forever. One advisor came to this event and signed a $2,000 a month planning client within a week. Another landed 2 new clients and doubled their financial planning revenue in just 30 days. I hope you can make this event. I'll be there with you live for the full 2 days. Visit howtochargelive.com to reserve your seat today. I'll see you there.
All right, the last one, and it felt like a lot of things came back to this, was the makeup of your team and your hiring process. In my experience, a less than great hire, and sometimes even a bad hire, could be the worst decision for my business. Like I feel in my body talking about it because I have a handful of people that come to mind that were good people, that were well-intentioned, but they didn't really have many skills. They didn't have much tenacity. And I had to spend so much time, effort, and money trying to extract from them what I wanted for them And at times I wanted it more for them than they wanted it for themselves. And I would spend 1, 2, in some cases, 5 years trying to get somebody to level up, and it didn't work out. As I reflect on that, I own most of it. I brought in the wrong person. I probably didn't have clear KPIs or a path to success for them on day one. I gave them essentially what I had when I entered the business, which is, hey, I'm here if you need me. We have a great system in place. Now go get them. And while that worked for some people, it doesn't work for everybody. So I was really challenged to say, and some of the metrics they used, do I interview 15 to 20 people for every role? And I instantly was like, of course not. Like maybe up to 10 tops. But I need more reps than that. They talked about your job post. Is it really specific and is it motivational? They talked about in an interview, this was a really great point. You should hire people that can add something immediately, that you don't have to train from scratch. I think the term they use is, we're not in the business like the coaching business. We're not in the business of training people from scratch on our dime to maybe hopefully get a return on that investment. We want to go find people that are proven that on day one can make an impact to my business. As an advisor, I do think there's a space for bringing on somebody that is a new advisor that needs training, but they still need tenacity. They need, you know, they want to work hard. Like there's things you can still evaluate that you're not getting somebody that's so green, never been in business, doesn't know what they're getting into, and they're going to require almost too much work. Especially if you're in a small firm and you don't have training resources. If you are the business owner, this was true for me in the past, I'm the main advisor, I'm the business owner, and I'm also the head coach and teacher of everybody. I'm pulled in way too many directions. I'm not going to do any of those roles at an elite level. So are you interviewing enough people? Do you have clear job descriptions and KPIs? Like, what do I need out of this role? And when you interview somebody, an indication of if they're great for the job is that when you're interviewing them, they actually teach you something. So imagine if I'm hiring for a marketing position. If in that room, when I'm interviewing that person, it feels like I'm driving the conversation and I'm having to extract answers from them, maybe they're not an authority in their space. But imagine in that meeting, they say, hey, can I take that whiteboard marker from you? And I jump, and they jump up on the board and they teach me something about funnel marketing or the flywheel, or hey, have you ever done this with your podcast? I think that's a great clue that they're going to bring some expertise on day one. The next piece when it comes to hiring is, it's okay at times to pay somebody before they become an employee to help you solve a problem. And so we're actively doing this right now with some of our hires, is as opposed to saying, hey, I got a good vibe from you, you took a DISC or a Colby assessment, let's see how this thing works out, which I've done some of that in the past. It's worked sometimes, most of the time it hasn't worked out great for the long term. I'm going to meet you, and while you're still working somewhere else, I'm going to offer to pay you on a project basis to help me solve a key problem that fits your job description. So now, instead of me moving you away from a job into a situation that may or may not work out, and then you don't have a job, we're going to work together. We're going to see what it looks like to have you involved in the culture, to see if you can really drive the results you think you can. And even at a high level, they were talking about when they've hired really high level execs, they were really straightforward. And they say, I'm going to pay you. Right now, you're asking to make $80,000, $100,000. I want to pay you for the next 3 months to work from 5 to 9 at night on a project that we need help with. If it's successful and you can prove to me that you're the right person, instead of paying you the 100 you're asking for, I'm willing to pay you 110, 115, 120, because you've de-risked it for me. I've seen you in action. And if you succeed, I'm willing to actually pay somebody that I know is going to be successful a higher salary than taking a risk on somebody that hasn't proven to me what they can do. So I was challenged a lot on the hiring process and the true cost of bringing on somebody that's not going to be a great addition to your team. And the smaller your team is, the more you'll feel that impact. So I'll wrap it up. Quick summary here. Point number one is find your constraint, what we call it EAN, your point of resistance to your full potential, and attack it at all cost. Have a great product, but then focus on growth. Don't go back and iterate your product. If it's Gitmo, if it's good enough to move on, focus on growth at all cost. Help more people. Trade novelty for loyalty. Don't get distracted. Data risk is huge. You should be making data-driven decisions at all times. And then what is your hiring process like? If you were to say from 1 to 10, 10 being it's so dialed in, I have a line of people waiting for jobs in my company, we have a super clear job description with KPIs, or 1, I know I need people. I'm just not hiring because I don't know what to do. A three is I'm trying to hire people. I just don't have a system around it. That could be some of the most costly mistakes for your business that you need to dial that in. Hope this was helpful. Check the event out. It was really great. I'm glad we went. I took my director of ops with me and I learned a lot. I was challenged. At times you need to get out of the office to be challenged so you can kind of look at everything you're doing and say, is it working? Is it great? Or is it good, but I actually want it to be great?